This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Well, this is Lauren Rosewarne. Lauren, are you there?
Hello, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. It's so rewarding when I hear that voice on the other end of the phone. Now, you are an associate professor at University of Melbourne, but we're going to chat about a very odd issue, but it's a reflection of society, I guess. The Louvre heist and the suspects found. Can you fill us in a bit?
Yeah, so this is specifically a story that caught my attention of a photograph that was taken during the earliest days of the investigation that had a man in a gold waistcoat and a fedora. And this went viral, this image of this man went viral because he was standing amongst policemen and he looked like everybody's preconception of what a French detective would look like. And he's not a detective at all. We don't know who he is. And the French prosecutor's office just cryptically said, we'll leave the mystery for you to decide. But he's still not been investigated. And everyone was obsessed with this man for a couple of days. He was just such the image of what we wanted the man doing the investigation into this robbery would look like.
Wow. So, so social media, rumor and groupthink sort of becomes almost truth.
When the image went out initially, like all such things, it got traction because a few very big accounts forwarded the photo. So that's what got it into most people's feed. Mm-hmm. But one of the posts actually mentioned it was not an AI image. And I think this is an interesting point in our history where we're so ready to assume AI now that when it's not AI, then it must be real. And it is real. That is a real man standing with police officers. But it's not real in the sense that it is not a photograph of a detective as much as we all wanted to believe it was.
Right. There's a part two to this. Two suspects have now been arrested and their photographs released.
Yes. And this in the days before... Sorry.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say in the days before the arrest, when we knew that there were an arrest, but before we'd seen the photos, there were people online saying, please hope that they're not hot, because the assumption was this could then turn into a Luigi Mangione case, which is the case from the United States with the the assassination that took place in New York of a health fund CEO.
Yeah. Yes, and that's sort of what's happened.
Of course it's what happened. It felt very, very predictable that, of course, this story that was made for cinema was going to have, stereotypically attractive men involved. I mean, it felt like this wasn't going to be like the, I think it was London robbery a few decades ago, the Hatton Garden job, which was a group of older, last job before retirement.
Crooks.
This one was always going to be young guys that can, scale walls and, it has a different feel to it here. You're not going to get Michael Caine playing one of these characters in a film adaptation.
Hopefully not. But, so the response to the two younger guys, I've seen joke posts from French women saying, yes, I've opened the safe and I've left the back door open, come on over sort of thing.
Not to mention different orifices where their own jewels are being stored that they could come and retrieve,
I haven't gone that deeply into it. Yeah, which is funny. And I'm happier laughing at that one than the health CEO one, which was, a murder, but people were sort of brushing that aside. But it's interesting.
Well, I think in that case, if you're looking for a parallel between the two, though, the CEO being murdered and the theft from the Louvre, yes, there's an idea where we like museums culturally, but there's also a perception this is still stealing from the rich. Yep. And we're at a time now where I think there is not only a loathing of the perception of ill-gotten gains, but that idea that we kind of are rooting for, maybe not necessarily for them to get away completely scot-free, but certainly that there is less hostility towards the perpetrators than there might be because the framing of the victims being rich.
Yeah, yep. And it's, like they're so rich and the things are so expensive and we are the underdogs.
The underdogs were being screwed over by capitalism. There's lots of different rationales, I think, that you could see at this moment in time where people are seeing that, yeah, okay, it's not good to steal or murder, but insofar as you've got to think of the bigger picture. And that, I think, is part of this story as well. There's also the idea about whether these kind of, who is the appropriate custodian for these kind of cultural treasures as well. I do say, though, I suggest most people observers wouldn't be thinking, well, thieves is the answer as opposed to a museum.
I agree. Thank you. We have a ban on social media for under 16-year-olds coming in December, I believe.
Yes.
How in Australia? How is that? Yeah. What's that going to do to social media? Is it going to, is it going to turn it more adult in a unsuitable way? Is it going to take away some of the cheeky teenage behaviour, or what do you think will happen?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is that a lot of this, you know, misinformation isn't being driven by children.
No.
So that's the first part of this story is to, okay, what social problems are we trying to address with this policy? And I think that this is one of those cases. There's evidence on both sides as to, yes, a ban or at least an age threshold for social media is a good thing versus other people who are saying it's actually quite socially isolating, and particularly for LGBTI kids, social media has actually been a place to connect with others before you've actually come out, and that you were taking away another safe space for kids who may not have in-person access to a network yet. So there's pros and cons to this that I think we should be really, really mindful of, because it feels very knee-jerk. It also feels like the policymakers don't realise there's such a thing as a VPN.
Right.
Other ways for kids to get around bans, as happens in countries like China, where there is state-imposed restrictions on all kinds of websites, and yet VPNs also exist.
And kids are the ones who are going to know the way around, all the ways around, all the blockages. But the problem is adults who behave like teenagers on social media because of the anonymity they can get. Anyway, it's an interesting question.
Well, that's been an issue since the very start of the internet, that people are going to use the technology for identity play. Again, though, most of the scamming, most of the romance scams, the catfishing, etc., isn't happening by children as well. So I think, again, is this the wrong solution to a genuine policy problem?
Yeah, but I think the impact on children in terms of depression and anxiety has been massive, and that's one of the reasons for it. There are two sides, obviously, to every argument, and all kids are different, but it's a big issue.
I think the other aspect is also the kids that they're targeting now are also the kids that spent a couple of years in lockdown. So it's also important to recognise that the role that the internet, particularly social media, has for these kids is very different from kids from any other generation.
Yeah, true.
We need to be really careful about what it means to take that away from them, because, again, what happens when we talk about this in public policy is externalities. You try and do one thing and you create another set of problems through that supposed solution.
Yeah, certainly they should think about a transition policy for the kids who are already on social media, because having it and then losing it is quite different from never having seen it at all.
Absolutely. And much like with cigarettes, you know, I think New Zealand has that policy of there's an age, if you were born after this date, you can't buy cigarettes anymore. And that kind of policy in different areas means it's not about ripping something away from you, but rather if you come of age this year, you won't have access to something.
Yeah.
Again, I'm always worried when the policy is about taking something away and not offering a solution. And I think that's part of what we've got happening here.
Much to think about. Lauren Rosewarne, thank you. Lovely to chat to you. We will chat to you again very soon.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.